Guys, I'm Richard Fitzgerald. This is Dubai Works, where we interview the business leaders making a difference in this great city.
That business with scalability was very interesting to me.
I like building something that has legacy.
So when we started Dubai Works Business Podcast 4 years ago, the idea was to show Dubai as a business capital by interviewing the various people operating and starting their businesses here. This entrepreneur, the person we speak to today, is one of those people who Dubai is extremely attractive to. He's built departments and teams and businesses in other markets, works for a global company and just wanted to be based here. So it's a super interesting conversation. We talk about technologies, operations, and market entry. And coincidentally, this week I had the pleasure to attend the Podfest organized by Dubai Press Office, which was a collection of all the different podcasters at the ecosystem. So not just the creators, the hosting companies like Podio, the production companies like Maya Media, Finja Media, which is now South, Kerning Cultures, Rising Giants Network, and some of the top creators as well from Saudi and elsewhere. And it was a real collection of top talent. So thank you very much to Dubai Press Office for organizing that and for having healthy discussions around the industry. And it's, you know, it's really out of that sort of collaboration with the press office and with the media office that this podcast started. So I want to thank them for their support at the start. Okay, and enjoy the conversation. Good morning, Rupert.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning or good afternoon. Yeah, usually we go live at 11, so technically it's morning. Yeah, so good morning. Thank you for joining. Where are you at the moment?
I am at home in Dubai Hills.
In Dubai Hills. Are you still post-pandemic working from home?
It's become a bit more free to work at home nowadays, but I'm out and about visiting clients quite a lot, so I tend to go into the office most days, but due to the peace and quiet here, I thought I'd do the interview here today.
The interview there, and is it quite flexible? Obviously, you meet a lot of clients remotely. So, are your team sort of in and out of the office a lot, or is it a set number of days that they go back?
Yes, yeah, so we've currently got about 9 or 10 advisors in the office, and they're all supported by an executive assistant. But generally, you know, if you're in the office, you might be doing a bit of paperwork or some research or writing reports. But generally, it's out and about seeing clients.
Yeah, brilliant. So when did Abacus Financial Consultants start, and what was your background before then?
So my background, after graduating from university, One of my friends' fathers was a financial planner down in Devon. So after getting to know them for sort of 3 years, he asked whether I wanted to come and join the company because his sons were joining. So that's how I sort of got into financial planning. And then I spent 5 years working in the UK. So did my exams, was a trainee advisor, then got signed off by the FSA, which is the FCA now. And then in 2007, I moved to Dubai. So I worked for a couple of companies when I first got here. But Jen, the back then, and even now, the landscape for sort of financial planning, there are levels of regulation, but what goes on within that regulation is sometimes a bit scrupulous. So There was a few of us that that I knew that were sort of career financial advisors that did it for a vocation. And then in 2013, we got together and we couldn't really find anywhere to go in the marketplace. So it sort of forced our hands into creating Abacus. So that was born almost 10 years ago in 2013. So we all had our existing client bank. So it was a place to sort of to take our clients and to look after them. And then from that, you know, we started becoming a real business and getting on new clients and putting in processes. So yeah, we're sort of multi-award winning for the last sort of 7 or 8 years now. So we've come a long way since the beginning.
Very good. What does Abacus mean? What's it in reference to?
Well, I guess Abacus is an ancient counting machine. You know what children have sometimes with the the bead. So yeah, it's an old style calculator, I guess.
And when you started the business, you know, it's often a common trend when people have a good number of years in an industry and they see ways that they could improve a service. Was that the service that you entered the offering with? So you were very much similar to another company, just with a fresh perspective on it.
Yeah, so yeah, traditionally this marketplace was full of sort of old style products and accounts that were typically sort of, you know, high charged commission bearing products. So for the first few years, our hands were sort of tied and what we could advise on. Over the next few years, because of the way we worked, we were approached by different organizations that sort of wanted to get a foot in the door in this part of the world and liked how we did things. So we've partnered up with different sort of organizations that basically allow us now to do a proper job. But yeah, back in the day, our hands were tied in that matter. So what we did within those products, though, is what counts. So it's not the product that gets the performance for the client. It's what's under the bonnet. It's what's inside. So we were because we started that, because we, you know, we owned it, we could have control over those investments and making sure that what's under the bonnet was good or is good, and that we're always putting the clients first. So I'd say now that we've got the relationships that enable us to do a decent job for our clients, yeah.
Okay, so can you walk us through the process? So there's someone who needs help with their financial planning. They reach out, they're willing to work with Abacus. What are the steps involved and what's the sort of services they're offered and the output?
Yeah, so I usually start by telling people that, you know, the reason we're sat here is for, it could be a number of three reasons, really. So if they're interested in protecting their family, if they are interested in protecting their assets, or they're interested in saving for the future. So those are the kind of pillars really of financial planning. So make sure your family and your health is protected. Then looking at your assets, and yeah, lots of different things you can do to protect that. And obviously we all need to be saving for the future, for our retirement. So we don't really do, as a company, we're not heavy on marketing. So we rely on referrals really from existing clients, or, you know, I might happen to meet someone and then we strike a conversation up and we can start helping them. But in terms of that process, yeah, someone's got to be, you know, they've got to want to engage, they've got to be serious, because it's a two-way relationship. It's a joint commitment, essentially. So that person has to want to prioritize protecting their family or prioritize saving for their future. It's not gonna work if they're sitting on the fence about those types of things and being responsible about those types of things.
And the output, the products, it obviously varies on, you know, of those three areas that you described. But essentially, are you, you know, you mentioned earlier being more products being accessible to you now and having more access than in the past. Is that so? Do you you know, put something, assess people's risk and put something in front of them based on a specific objective and then take it from there?
Yeah, so we're not economists, we're not fund managers, we're financial planners. So it's about making sure things are being passed to their family who they want things to be passed to. So making sure a will gets affected. It might mean, protecting, the main income winner against premature death or critical illness. So that's sort of the foundation of any good financial planning plan is the protection. And then we do have a risk profile questionnaire that we complete with every client who wants to move on to the investments. So, and then it's a case of making sure, what jurisdiction is that investment in? Are the regulation, the laws in that jurisdiction, are they sound? Are they of the highest quality? And then it's about finding, good, tangible, real investments that are going to get some growth over the long term.
Is it, is it sort of consultancy on a one-off basis, or are they long-term relationships with your clients?
Oh yeah, it's definitely very much long-term. It's a joint commitment, and it's very much long-term. So if someone takes out an account with us, these accounts tend to be based in places like Jersey, where there are good regulation over there. And then we will be in contact with our clients at least four times a year with reporting and sort of latest valuations and that kind of stuff, and also reporting on the state of the markets and giving our view on how things are going.
And of the breakup of your clients at the moment, do you break it down, or could you be able to assess whether most of them are people who are doing protecting their assets or protecting their lives, or is it more about investments for the future? What's the breakdown?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the demographic. So if you've got a single 30-year-old person, they're probably just about thinking about starting a pension or something like that. So planning for that is relatively easy. Then you've got, on the opposite end of the scale, you've got people sort of approaching retirement. So they may have a few different pension pots lying around that need tidying up they haven't looked at. We've recently started looking at cash flow forecasting. Mm. So we can take all a client's data, we can pop it into the some technology. We can show them physically on the screen, if you retire at this age, this is what your future is going to look like. Or do you want to retire 2 years early? This is what it looks like, and we can map that out over their life cycles. So, it's some really good planning, financial planning that we're doing in that respect. So, and you've got someone who's maybe in retirement and they're taking an income from their pension or their investment pot. And they want to start thinking about, inheritance planning. So they might be from the UK. They might have heard of inheritance tax that is levied on, one's worldwide assets. And they might want to do some protecting against that. Or they might want to protect against, other things that look after their interests.
Interesting. So, yeah, you mentioned the UK. Of course, Dubai has many nationalities. Is it difficult to stay on top of all the regulations in various countries? And, often if you're working with immigrants here, then they can't really, due to the regulation, they can't really invest in long term here. So they need to, something needs to be understood of the regulation in their home country.
I mean, we tend to deal with, because I am British, I tend to deal with British people just because, obviously familiar with the language, familiar with the tax system, familiar with the currency and all these different things. So we do have a Australian advisor in the office who obviously we'd probably pass Australians and New Zealanders over to him if we meet clients. But yeah, as a rule of thumb, it's probably it could be very dangerous if you get something wrong. You know, you don't have all the information about a certain country and the tax situations over there. So it's probably better to be safe than sorry in those respects. So, the British population here is quite large. So most of our clients as a company do tend to be British.
Okay, fair enough. And you mentioned earlier, Rupert, that you're not necessarily a fund manager or economist, but there's a level of there's a level of wealth management here as well, isn't there, on a certain scale. What sort of activities does a financial consultant need to have on a license, and where does it sort of overlap with what financial institutions provides versus what you would provide?
Yeah, so probably what I touched on just before about us as financial planners. So 10 years ago, we were building portfolios that were available within the certain products, and we were doing what's called rebalancing every 3 months. But after a while, we just thought we're still having to select those funds, and we're not necessarily qualified to do that. So as a company, we were looking to de-risk that. So we started working with what's called discretionary fund managers. Mm. So what they do is all day long is build portfolios, look after those portfolios. They're increasing, decreasing the asset allocation or coming in and out of different funds based on high levels of research. So we tend to outsource the actual management of our clients' assets to the experts so that we can sleep at night, and then our clients can sleep at night, because they tend to obviously, we don't advise on future performance, but we can show clients, well, this is their track record, this is what they've done during this time period. These are the returns over a certain amount of time. And we tell our clients that we're no way near going to double your money overnight, but over a 10-year period, you'll be looking at modest and constant returns if you invest for the long term.
And do you have relationships with different insurance companies as well?
Yeah, we do. We do work with some of the insurance companies, but we've seen a drop in insurance-based products, because traditionally they were quite highly charged. They were probably missold over the decades here. So essentially, we broke, when we started Abacus, what do clients really want? We might end up becoming friends with our clients, but really at the end of the day, they sort of want performance. They want modest to low charges, and they want good service. So in terms of the performance, that's why we outsource to experts, and hope that, based on their research and their experience, they can provide a return for our clients. We use platforms. So the technology, if you take out an account, you've got online visibility. It's world-class technology that clients can drill down into their investments and see exactly what they've got. And obviously the service comes into it. So for us to retain our clients, we've got to be able to demonstrate that we're on top of things, and we're going to provide a good service. So like I said, whether clients like it or not, they hear from us at least 4 times a year.
And what are some of the things that people can do to protect their assets? So, tangible assets like property or other investments, or even if people own companies or if they have different types of assets, what are some of the things that they can do?
Well, the easiest thing and the first thing one should do is take out a will. So as a rule of thumb, where the asset is, there should be a will in that jurisdiction to protect it. So if someone owns a property here in the UAE, then chances are the best thing for them would be to take out a DIFC will. So on top of having a property there's lots of what's called movable items. So bank accounts, cars, people own boats here or motorbikes, right? All these things that can be protected in a DIFC will. Obviously, if someone's got a property in the UK, they should have a will over there. In terms of investments, it's always good to, if you're a married couple, to make the account joint. So if anything happens to one of the partners, the account can stay open, doesn't have to necessarily be closed and go through probate or anything like that. So that's quite an easy thing to do. Probably in the UAE, having if you're a married couple, having separate bank accounts. Because obviously, we've heard that if anything happens to one of the partners, that bank account gets frozen. In terms of investments, so we do quite a lot of, like I was touching on earlier, inheritance tax planning in the UK, but also trust planning. So, you know, protecting your interests against certain forces, or making sure that money goes to legacy goes to the children that the children you want them to go to.
Are they common nowadays? Trusts, family trusts, and things like that. Is that still common and modern?
Yeah, for certain things it can be. So again, going back to British clients, there's a few tried and tested trusts out there that have been around for since last century that we can use to help clients. So it's probably not as prominent as it would be if you're an advisor working in the UK, but for some clients it works very well. So there's a real sort of sweet spot for certain types of estates where a big chunk can be protected against that 40% that potentially has to be paid for in inheritance.
Well, so how do you view the industry here? Is it competitive? Do you have many firms offering what you do? And how has it changed since you started almost 10 years ago?
There are a number of companies here. A few years ago, the sort of commission rules sort of changed, which was a good thing. So back in 2015-16, Abacus sort of became a fee-based consultancy. So we charge clients for the work that's involved with setup and ongoing costs and that kind of thing. So,
What can you explain that? The fees, there used to be commissions, or there used to be incentive on transactions or something, and then that the regulators changed that?
Yeah, so certain products would typically pay a commission if they were introduced by the advisor. These tended to have maybe lock-in periods, so it might be 5, 10, 15, up to 25 years. And then also penalties to access your cash. So by becoming fee-based, obviously the client knows exactly what they're paying, and things like having lock-in periods and surrender penalties and being able to access your money at zero cost or things that really, that should have always existed. But in this part of the world, it's only in recent years that this has sort of come in over here. 10 years ago, everything really was commission-based.
So it's now more fees-based. And how else have things changed? Has digital changed things? You mentioned that the clients have access to dashboards, but are people investing in different ways and planning in different ways now with online?
Yeah, most certainly. So that's one thing that's massively changed in the 15 years I've been here. So originally, without the online access, clients weren't necessarily checking their investments so often. So we would never advise people to be checking on a daily basis. It's best to look at things quarterly and then look back over that time period to see what's happened. In today's world, that's why we have to be able to offer the good technology for our clients, because that's just modern day culture nowadays. But clients are probably checking their accounts too often, and with what's going on in the world at the in the market at the moment, valuations are predominantly down. So clients are better advised not to be looking too often at the moment,
especially Yeah, especially when from your side that you probably put something more long-term in place rather than short-term. And to that point, you know, when clients work with Abacus, do you find that they also have, that they manage their own portfolios with online trading apps, or that they have other investments like crypto and things like that? And so are they doing both side of things, planning for the future with a plan that you've advised, and then doing something more short-term and more risky themselves?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that's been coming in over the last few years. So yeah, I'd encourage any form of saving, really, as long as as long as it's not totally crazy and it's backed by real tangible assets. But yeah, people are taking punts on things like crypto or shares, but you know, you don't need Rupert Connor to advise you on how to buy crypto. You can go onto Google now and get that for yourself. There's no need to pay us to help you with that. And it's not something that we'd ever really advise on. We've got to be able to sleep at night knowing our clients can sleep at night because their assets are being held in good growth, tangible assets that are going to grow over time. Yeah, markets will go up, down and sideways, but over a 10, 15, 20 year period, you know, if you join the dots, the line's going to be going up, and that's what historically has always happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about, so you know the UK market in the UAE quite well. How have British people changed in their planning here in the last 10 years? Are they, you know, looking more about staying here longer, and almost have you had questions about retirement here as well?
I think clients, so certainly since I've got here, I still know a lot of people that are still here from when I first got here. So people are definitely staying here longer. I think the majority of British people tend to think they will go back at some point to the UK to retire. So it's about building towards that end date, I guess. And while they're here, filling up that, you know, making hay while the sun shines, and filling up that, you know, retirement pot as quickly as possible. So I always tell clients, you know, if they are sitting on the fence about saving for their retirement, you know, now is the time to be doing it, right? When you've got a job, your income's, chances are you've got good disposable income because of the tax-free status over here. So it's when you stop working or when you move, that's when you stop contributing. You know, the important thing is to fill, you know, to get that level up as quickly as possible, so that in retirement you can enjoy a similar type of lifestyle. So it depends on what the client wants and what his or her, you know, what does retirement look like for them? Are they going to be, are their children going to be living in the US and they're going to be traveling over there to visit them? Are they going to be living in a village in the countryside in the UK, or are they going to try and or stay in Dubai? I think a lot of people going forward will try and stay in Dubai, obviously with the 10-year visa and the rules around owning a property, and you know, all changed recently. So it's becoming a lot more open here, and probably maybe 10, 15 years ago, it would have been more impossible to retire here past 65. But I think, you know, as a country, I think they want to welcome this change and have people, you know, living here for the long term. So, I mean, we can all see that's, you know, the rules have been changing in favor of attracting investors and residents over here, so this place can continue. Just got to hope that the property prices come down again.
Yeah, absolutely. They're high at the moment. And, you know, as a financial planner, with sort of macro tsunamis or macro headwinds that come about every now and again economically, how do you change your approach? You know, we're having high energy prices. There's obviously inflation and talks of a global recession. And this might remind you of when you came here first, but how as a financial planner do you tweak what you're advising or your approach, or is it the same? You know, the famous sort of principle, Ray Dalio has his all weathers approach, where it's almost planned to sustain any potential environment. Do you kind of look at it that way as well?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what stage the client's at in their life, but certainly at the moment, it's something that the individual has to take responsibility for in terms of battening down the hatches, right? So when the cost of living goes up, what can we do on a daily basis not to incur the type of expenses that we normally would? So, you know, we live in Dubai, so a lot of people have a lot of luxury holidays. Do you need to have so many a year? Do you need to have that second car? Do you need to, be traveling back to the UK all the time? So there's lots of things we can do on a daily basis to reduce that. So, yeah, I think at the moment people should be, a little bit concerned. I think, you know, the world economy hasn't quite caught up to Dubai yet. I think we're potentially, you know, in a little bit of a property bubble at the moment. So, yeah, I think the important thing, though, in all of that is people might be saving on a monthly basis into some sort of pension, is to, you know, maybe look at reducing that on a monthly basis, but you've got to keep on going with it. So that expense should be like, you know, it's like having a mortgage. You should always be paying on a monthly basis into something as a pension. Why do we invest in the first place? Well, it's to beat inflation. Like you said, if you can get through this period, you know, you're well set up for the future, and you can pretty much get through anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even though there might be sort of an economic downturn in the UAE in the years to come, if what's happening in other parts of the world is anything to go by, you know, but do you feel that the country has bounced back from the pandemic quite well? And, you know, we see statistics of, you know, the number of millionaires in the UAE is climbing all the time. It's not quite at the Hong Kong or London or New York levels, but it's climbing all the time. So you're having, and the age group of those wealthy individuals is sort of not as, it's sort of mid-range. So are you seeing not just prospective clients for Abacus, but a different type of a clientele in the country in general?
Yeah, I think so. So obviously the country did a fantastic job during the pandemic and certainly has bounced back. And it's, you know, that openness that was allowed really has sort of shone through now. So a lot of people have seen what a fantastic place this is to live and how open it is. And like, you know, with the laws changing, the visa laws changing, it's become a place that is a destination for lifestyle and also for work. So I think, you know, you sort of read in the press about the region wanting to get, you know, become a crypto center as well. So that's going to attract sort of young people once that sort of bounces back. But yeah, it's very positive.
And I know you don't necessarily do equities planning and fund management and investments for your clients, but what's your view in general? Like, we're seeing a lot of the state-owned or semi-state companies go on the public markets. A lot of their prospectus has fixed yields and, you know, guaranteed dividends year on year. So this is something that hasn't been available to anyone in the UAE, you know, when you see utilities going public and things like that. Back in other countries, like in the UK, that when a utility would go public, many people would be encouraged to invest in it. And we're seeing something similar here now. Do you think that that's something that, you know, creates even is really more opportunity for investment in the country?
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, like I said earlier, I think we encourage any sort of form of saving or investment. So when you've got establishments like that offering shares, I think it's a good idea. I had a number of clients sort of message me about it and what I thought about it. So I think you're quite limited to how much you can actually put as a starting block. But obviously, yeah, we'd encourage it. But traditionally with our clients, we sort of work on the asset allocation theory. So they say that by having a diversified portfolio, 90% of returns come from being diversified. So traditionally that would be sort of made up of 40% bonds, 60% equities with some, you know, alternatives in there and some cash. So that's broken down even further into maybe UK equity, US equity, Japan, Far East, emerging markets. And then that's obviously monitored on a daily basis. So by being a truly global diversified portfolio, you can spread that risk. Obviously at the moment with markets, it's we're in unprecedented times. So even the bond, you know, the bond element of other diversified portfolio was what you traditionally would hedge it and protect it against downturns. But for the first time in a long time, you've got both equities and bonds down at the moment. So valuations don't look too pretty. But having said that, you know, all the companies that were giving treble digit returns last year, you know, they don't become bad companies overnight. They're still in profit. They're still paying dividends. So I think a lot of the how the market reacts nowadays is down to sentiment, and what's said in the press tends to sort of direct a lot of it. So, you know, we're confident that at some point that dip will start coming back up. And obviously, you know, at the moment valuations are down so much, so effectively there's a sale on. So all those people that are contributing on a monthly basis, it's the money going in over the next 18 months that will show a good return in the years to come. So, you know, when do we buy our clothes or when do we buy things? We get them in a sale. So, you know, now is the time to be, there's an opportunity there for investors, certainly.
That's a positive outlook. It's a good way of looking at it. And what about as well, you know, the value of the British pound is, you know, against the dollar has decreased a lot in the last sort of 6 to 12 months. How has that impacted some of your clients and how do you protect against that?
Yeah, so it's had a really big impact on certain investments. So if you've got a US dollar portfolio, within that diversified portfolio, there's going to be assets in there that are euro or GBP or pound denominated. So with the pound increasing over the pound, it means it has a negative effect on those assets that are held in euro or GBP, even though your currency is US dollar. So we've seen our US dollar portfolios perform a lot worse than the sterling portfolios. So when I came out to Dubai, I think it was 7.1, 7.2 to the dirham. So it's been a sort of steady decline over the last 15 years to where we are now. So, you know, no one's got a crystal ball, but it wouldn't be hard to imagine it, parity at some point with the dollar. But hopefully at some point we can get it back up to 1.3, 1.4. I don't think we'll ever see the pound being equal to the dollar ever again, but certainly up to sort of 1.3, 1.4, it could creep back up to that at some point. And that's really where we want it to be. But obviously people sending money back to the UK, it's a great time for them at the moment. So I wouldn't be advising taking loans out or anything to do that. But certainly if you've got disposable income and if you're going to go back to the UK one day and you're going to spend in pounds, then it makes sense. Just sending it over there willy-nilly for no reason into a sort of taxable and potentially taxable environment without any sort of plan, probably not that sensible.
Yeah, interesting. Good perspective. One of the things I wanted to ask about is legally, was there a change in the law? I know there was a lot of laws introduced around National Day last year around different things in the country, but in terms of ownership of assets and property and inheritance, was something changed there where it can be done at your home country level now and not in the UAE?
I believe that the law was changed to that if you have a will in your home country, this could be accepted by the judge. Now, I don't know whether in practice this would the laws change, but in reality, whether that would be taken into consideration, if you want to be squeaky clean about it, you get a will done here in the DIFC if you wanted to be truly protected, because the DIFC will has been tested. It does work, so we know that. But if you were to put a UK will in front of a local judge here, I'm not sure. I don't know what the outcome would be.
And you mentioned earlier, I forget the words that you said, but it's probably legal, but so there was something about the delay or what would happen if it went through the courts. What's that called again?
So probate.
Yeah.
Can you explain? Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, if things aren't protected, then everything just goes into probate. So if someone's got a life insurance policy, for instance, and it's not if they're British and it's not in a trust or the paperwork hasn't been done for a trust, it means that, let's say, there was a payout of £250,000 and there was no trust or no beneficiary nominated, it would just go into probate, and then it would take 6 months for that to be paid out once probate's finished. But if someone has a trust around, well, trust becomes affected in the event of a claim. So in the event of death, the trust would come into force, and rather than it having to go through probate and taking time, it can just get paid directly to the beneficiary. So anyone with a life insurance policy should check this and make sure, if they're British, they have that set up. So that's like financial planning 101.
Interesting. And so what's next for Abacus? You're sort of nearly 10 years in now. Is it where you expected to be at the start? Has it been a bumpy ride? Are you sort of pleased with how the outlook for this year is and planning for the future?
Yeah, we're really pleased. So obviously we keep winning awards, so it's good to be recognised by the industry in that. We're a debt-free company. We're well recognised. I'd say that we're quite boutique. We're quite small. We're not incredibly well known in the marketplace. But our clients are very loyal. We have a sort of 100% retention record with our clients. We offer good service, we just want to. So it's of the utmost importance that we always give the right advice, because we want to stay in the region for long term. We want our clients to recommend their friends to us and tell their friends about us, so they become clients too. So it's obviously important. Everything we do, we're very compliance heavy in the company, in terms of advice is always checked and nothing gets through that can't get through, basically. So yeah, it's of the utmost importance that we always give the right advice, because we want to be in this part of the world for decades to come.
And this part of the world, do you mean the UAE, or would you potentially expand to Saudi's opening up and other markets? Would you look elsewhere as well?
It's not on the cards at the moment. What further down the line, it might be nice to maybe have a sort of connection back in the UK for returning clients, so that voyage can be seamless in terms of their financial planning process.
Makes sense. Sounds like a good plan. Good financial plan. Well, thank you very much, Rupert. Thanks for speaking today. And so the first protocol, if people go on your website, do you suggest a sort of a one-on-one meeting with people, or is there a way that they can find out a bit more about what you do?
Yeah, so we just revamped our website, actually, abacus.ae, and people can make contact through there. We do, I do quite a lot of writing on LinkedIn for different publications over here. So we are working on our knowledge side of the website. So if someone's got a question about inheritance tax planning or trust planning or pensions, rather than in the first instance, they can read about it, and if they're interested, they can get in touch and make an appointment. But yeah, in the first protocol, it's always good to meet up for just to build some rapport and to make sure that there's that sort of chemistry there, where you know, that sort of joint commitment I alluded to earlier, where you know, that joint commitment to want to work together on this.
Amazing. Well, it's good to hear. We always hear about, like, hearing about successful Dubai businesses in different sectors. So congratulations on the success and the awards so far, and we'll follow your journey in the future.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us. That was interesting. It's always great to chat to people optimistic about this city business-wise, and we can definitely learn a thing or two. I found the bit about banking and the area that we can catch up on in development and fintech and others inspiring. And you know, there's always more opportunity as well in the city, and I hope you did too. Thank you to our editors and producers, Shahir and Ali. We are live on smashy.tv, most smart TV apps now. You can find us, Apple, Android, Sony, TCL, and a few more to come. If you are listening on the podcast, please do like, comment, subscribe, and share. Every listener counts. And do let us know if you'd like to hear of any companies or any inspiring entrepreneurs that you hear of in the future that you'd like on Dubai Works. And we'll be back next week with another episode.